It's Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. I'm Craig Hoffman. Thank you for checking us out. If, say, you got a breaking news alert that Jamin Davis was let go, and you're like, hey, I would like some coverage on the radio or on YouTube or on the Odyssey app, and you tuned in and you found us for the first time, we do this every single day from 4 to 7 o'clock. And on Tuesdays in particular, it's a very special day around here because for a little segment we call Not My Beat. I used to be a beat reporter who covered the team, and now nothing's my beat. I talk about whatever I want. It's the beauty of it. We bring in someone with some elevated expertise at 5 o'clock. And on Tuesdays, that person is our friend Mitch Tischler.
Today's top story, from the perspective of someone who's there.
You are looking live.
This just in.
Not my beat.
Of course, Mitch is a longtime producer extraordinaire for Monumental Sports, previously NBC Sports Washington, and the co-host of the Beltway Football Podcast with J.P. Finley. Mitchell, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. I appreciate the rundown of the long resume.
We just got to let the people know that we got some serious expertise around here, at least on the phone. And then there's also me.
Get out of here.
All right. That would be for a very awkward show. That's actually me getting out of here is Anthony's nightmare. Some producers, Mitch, they want to actually host the show. Anthony, would you ever want to actually host the show?
For about 5 minutes.
Okay, that's all. Thank you. You just got your 5 seconds. That's good enough for Anthony for right now. Mitch, we thought that this would be a light content day. We'd have to really dig deep because that Carolina game was only so interesting. And then the Commanders cut Jamin Davis. What's your reaction to that news, and how much of it is about the former administration and how much of it is about the current one?
I mean, I want to keep it about the current one because I think we've kicked the dead horse of how bad the previous regime was at drafting and pretty much everything that they did here in the 4 years. I appreciate that this regime tried to take on a project like Jamin Davis and tried to, you know, reinvent him and give him an opportunity to, you know, reinvent his career and create a cutout for where he could possibly help this team. Unfortunately, it just didn't work out that way. And, you know, I think you got to give them credit for, you know, trying to think outside the box and trying to find something to do with a player who doesn't really fit a particular mold. And it's unfortunate for Jamin that didn't work out. But, you know, they gave him an opportunity. And what I do like about this regime is that when they find a player who can't help them or it's time to move on from them, there is no, you know, dragging their feet. There is no kind of play in the game of, oh, you know, he's a former first-round pick, we should keep him, blah, blah, blah. They decide he can't help, time to move on, bring someone in who can, and keep this thing moving.
Yeah, I think that's actually a really important point to underscore here, which is, like, I want to talk about Jamin specifically, and on some level, give him flowers, which I know feels very weird on the day he's released, but I'll get there in a second. I think with what I appreciate about this organization is Jamin was their best option until now. Like, they've got to make roster moves because there's only 53 spots, and they decided that, hey, the work we've done with Jamin is worth it. He's gotten to a place that this is the best guy we've got, and we're going to keep him until we have a better option. And then they do, and it's not this game of, oh, he's a first rounder, he's this, he's that. It's who's going to be the best guy for us? Does he fit what we want to be? Jamin at least fit what they wanted to be from an effort standpoint, and then obviously from a skill standpoint, there were some to be desired. But I do think this is purely like a football, what's best for us right now decision, and there's literally no other considerations, especially for a guy. We got this question in the YouTube chat. Here's the answer. There's no financial implications here. They were going to have to pay Jamin's cap number regardless the rest of the season, whether he's on the team or not. So essentially, he is cut for free. It's just the money that was salary now becomes dead money, and it counts the exact same amount on the cap. It just moves columns. So to me, this is purely a football decision and one made in a dynamic way, not in anything that's narrative driven, Mitch.
Yeah, exactly. And the fact that the football decision is what's important here, because it isn't, you know, it isn't a public perception decision. It isn't a, you know, let's stick it to this guy type of decision. These are guys that come in here and they're making their calls the best they can with what they can do. And you look at how beat up the defensive line was last week, and, you know, you have the Dorrance Armstrong injuries, obviously, you know, the John Allen one and Javonte Jean-Baptiste as well. You know, you had a bunch of injuries and you still had a guy who was only able to find the field for 16 snaps against a Carolina team in a 40-7 blowout. I mean, I don't know what more, you know, what more indication you need that this guy isn't important to what this coaching staff and what this team wants to get to than the fact that in a 40-7 blowout, this guy still only saw the field 16 times. It run its course, and I'm happy that this storyline, this conversation, isn't something that has to hang over this team for the rest of the season.
Mitch Tischler, co-host of the Beltway Football Podcast, with us for his weekly visit on the Team 980. So the question you always ask about a first-round pick when it doesn't work out is, like, why didn't it work out? And I think for Jamin, like, you have to give him the credit that when it came to this season with this group and this position change, he tried his best. Playing defensive end in the NFL is harder than hell. Like, it's really, really difficult. And I don't think he's particularly set up for that. And he gave it the old college try. Ultimately, he didn't pass it. No qualms about him being released. But when you look at the bigger picture of why Jamin Davis didn't work in D.C. as the 19th overall pick, what's your best shot at that answer?
I think that he wasn't quite the player that Ron Rivera and company had hoped that he was. You know, you look at this roster and it's riddled with guys with high relative athletic scores, and Jamin Davis is one of those guys. But you also have players like Chase Young who have super high RAS scores as well, are super athletic, and for whatever reason, it just doesn't translate to the football field, whether it's instincts, whether it's coaching, whether it's positioning, whatever it may be. You have a player who has all of the physical tools but wasn't able to find a way to make big plays on Sundays. And, you know, aside from this season where he never really had a lot of opportunity, he had 3 years there where he was playing a lot of football. And certainly he found his way from time to time into big plays, but far too often he was out of position. Far too often he was part of the reason that the defense gave up big plays, both in the run game and the pass game. I mean, you know, you go back to the whole, you know, one of the reasons that they wanted to draft him was how he performed against that Florida team and Kyle Pitts. Meanwhile, Kyle Pitts went for 99 yards and 3 touchdowns in the game that they lauded, you know, Jamin Davis's incredible, you know, coverage skills against. I think that it was a player who was maybe a little bit overdrafted and then never quite was able to figure out how to be an NFL football player. And that is without mentioning, you know, the off the field shenanigans, which were their own issues with multiple big speeding tickets and arrests, and whether he's going to spend time in jail for one of those speeding tickets. He's a guy who, you know, never really found his place here in Washington, both on the field and off, and ultimately he's moving on somewhere else.
Yeah, and then again, could be in the locker room tomorrow. It wouldn't surprise me if they bring him back on the practice squad unless they feel like they can go another direction and find someone else on the edge. But they also might be like, yeah, it's not really worth it. So we'll see. Mitch Tischler with us here on The Hoffman Show. Okay, back to the game on Sunday, Mitch. It's a 40-7 win against a team that is barely an NFL team at the moment, not very talented and banged up. What, if anything, do you take out of that game, which is obviously interesting because of just how well the defense did, nearly pitching a shutout, and the fact that the offense put up their 40 with, of course, I guess 33, 7 of that on the pick 6, but 30-plus points with Marcus Mariota?
I mean, I take a lot away from it. I've been listening to, you know, some other radio programs and some callers and on social media, folks kind of poo-pooing this win and being like, oh, Carolina was 1-5 heading into the game, they're terrible, all these different things. This is who the Washington Commanders have been. This is what the Washington football team was. This is what the Washington Redskins team was back in the day. These were bad teams that used to get beat up on by other teams, and other teams used to do this to them on a regular basis. Washington is showing the rest of the NFL kind of where they land in this echelon of teams. They might not be the Ravens yet. They might not be the Bills or the Chiefs or a team that you expect is going to win, you know, could compete for a Super Bowl this season. But they're also showing you that they've taken a big step up as to who they are as a franchise. And part of that is beating up on bad teams. They beat up on the Panthers badly. They beat up on the Browns. All you can do is play the teams in front of you. And I think when you see a game like Sunday where, despite losing their quarterback, which could have been easily, you know, the air could have left the building and the team as well as me because, you know, Jaden got hurt in the first, you know, quarter of a football game. But that wasn't the case. And not only did Marcus Mariota step up and play well, and Cliff Kingsbury called a spectacular game offensively, the fact that the defense steps up as well and we're getting those turnovers and getting those stops and putting the offense in a position to be successful is a big step up for this team and for this organization. All you can do is play what's in front of you, and the fact that they keep beating up on these bad teams is impressive, because for so long, these are games that would be played close. The team might lose. The team might win, whatever may happen. Right now, there's a bad team on the schedule. You can be confident that this team is going to step up and play well.
For sure. There is a professionalism to them that has never existed in the time that I've covered the team, I think in the time that you've covered the team. Dare I say, in the time that John Keim has covered the team? Like, it has been a long, long time. I guess the only thing that I would follow up with, Mitch, then, is to say, okay, there's still a skill level and a test level that, if you try to project it forward, is a little more convoluted. Ultimately, the professionalism is good, but how confident are you if Jaden doesn't play, which at this point on a Tuesday is very, very if. We'll know more tomorrow, depending on how much he practices. But if Jaden were to be unable to go against Chicago, how confident are you that this offense can perform against a Chicago defense that is very, very good?
Yeah, I mean, obviously a much better test this week. Listen, after Marcus Mariota, after that first series, he was 0-for-3. He finished the game 18 of his last 20, 205 yards, 2 touchdowns, moved the ball effectively. And that was after they ran the ball in the first half for, 180-plus yards. It wasn't like they came out in the second half and, said, hey, we have our backup quarterback in. Let's run the ball. Let's get out of here and move it. They continue to throw the ball. They continue to press the gas, and I like to see that. And, obviously the Bears are a much tougher defense, but I do think that you'll see them be a little more balanced, especially, as the game moves on. They're going to run the ball with Brian Robinson a little bit more. I think Jeremy McNichols will see the ball. And the big thing is Marcus Mariota isn't the same dynamic player that Jaden Daniels is, but he's similar in the way that he runs the offense. And, left hand up for me, I didn't think Marcus Mariota was a good backup quarterback for this team, because what we saw in the preseason and in training camp wasn't particularly strong. But to go out there and play the way that he did against the Panthers and pick it right up and be able to, move that offense is impressive. And I think that it's going to be incumbent on what Cliff Kingsbury continues to do with this offense. I loved, his play calling, his play design, from early in that game. You're seeing a coach who is sequencing his plays. The long run from Jaden Daniels, the one that I guess he ultimately got hurt on last week, they ran that same exact look, that same against play against the Ravens, except he handed it off to Eckler, who got 5-6 yards. That time he faked the handoff and obviously took it around the edge and had a lot of open space. I love when you see coaches and you can see the sequencing where they set up teams, not just in-game, but week-to-week and game-to-game, and you can show them a certain eye candy 1 week and come back in 2, 3, 4 weeks from there and play off that same expectation that they've seen that play before. And Cliff's doing a really good job of doing that. And I think Marcus can step right in and continue to run this offense. And it might not be the same dynamic level that Jaden is, but at the same time, I think that Marcus can get the job done.
Yeah, the Ben Sinnott touchdown was the exact same kind of thing. They had set up that, zone read in the red zone, getting out on the edge with the arc blocking tight end. And then all of a sudden, instead of blocking, Sinnott slips into the corner and you got an easy touchdown. So Cliff's doing a tremendous job. My one concern, and I feel like when I say concern, it's probably overstating it to an extent. But my one I wonder, if you will, is that was glorified 7-on-7. Carolina's pass rush was completely non-existent. And I do wonder if Marcus is under more pressure against the Bears, how that offense performs and how he performs. Because also, when you don't have any pressure, you don't have any negative plays. They're running the mess out of the ball. They're not going to do that as consistently. And so there just weren't like the, hey, it's 2nd and 13 or 3rd and 9. We need you to ball here, and the blitz is going to be dialed up. He didn't have to face any of that, and that's just not realistic for NFL football. At least it's not supposed to be, but I guess Cliff has found ways to avoid it in multiple games this season, and we'll see.
Yeah, and you know what? And the offensive line has played well, and I was concerned when Marcus came in that, he was going to expose the offensive line a little bit because he's not quite the same athlete that Jaden is, and quite frankly, that wasn't the case. And part of it is a beat-up, bad Panthers D-line, linebacking core that they have there. But at the same time, you know, there were no breakdowns. There were no misplay calls. There were no delay of games, penalties, these things that sometimes happen when backup quarterbacks come in. And so, you know, I think it's okay to be optimistic here. And I think, to me, the one place where I am concerned with Marcus is just with his arm strength and his ability to get the ball to outside the numbers. But that's something that, you know, his timing and his experience and getting the ball out early hopefully will help kind of counteract any lack of arm strength that he has. But, you know, from what we've seen, I am confident that the offense is going to continue to move the football at a relatively good pace, whether it's Jaden or Marcus Mariota in there.
Mitch Tischler, co-host of the Beltway Football Podcast, with us here on the Hoffman Show. Last thing, of course, Mitchell, would be the defense. There's one drive where they're tested. It ends in a pick six. Ultimately, that's good. Is there anything that you took from this game on the defensive side, either of concern or of quelling concern? Because this Carolina offense coming into the week was actually pretty good with Andy Dalton. Like, they had been fairly consistent, and Washington just absolutely dump trucked them. They get the game flow on their side early. But what do you take out of this game defensively that you think is relevant moving forward?
I think it was just a confidence builder for the most part. That's the biggest thing that I take away from it. Certainly big for Emmanuel Forbes to get that interception. We're looking at two straight weeks here where Dante Fowler has been a big, big part of the pass rush and has made big plays. I think he's starting to, forgive the pun, turn the edge a little bit here. But to me, the biggest thing I look at is the run game, because, you know, without John Allen, there was concern that the interior of that defense was going to get beat up a little bit and, you know, continued to give up big, big time yards on the ground. And Chuba Hubbard had done a pretty good job. He was averaging 5+ yards a carry, and he comes in and gets 17 carries and averages, you know, whatever, 3 a pop, give or take. And I think you saw, you know, the interior of that D-line step up. And I think a lot of it, you have to give Fedarian Mathis and John Dean, I think, a lot of credit for what they've done. Johnny Newton as well. And I love, you know, what Joe Witt has done with this D-line, because you see him lining up with those three D-linemen out there. And then your fourth guy is either Frankie Louvu or Dante Fowler coming around the edge. And I think the three big guys up there did a good job of stuffing up that offensive line and not giving them a ton of room to run around and opening up the lanes for those linebackers to step up and make plays in the run game.
Yeah, and I think Big Phil specifically deserves a ton of credit for how he's been able to hold the line. And just that's his job, is to eat blocks, and he's doing a tremendous job of it. And I think you see the difference when he's in there. Mitch Tischler, you can get much more from him and JP Finley on the Beltway Football Podcast, which is not only producing episodes basically every day during the season, but is live on the Monumental Sports app after each and every game. Mitchell, always a pleasure, sir. See you Sunday and talk to you next week.
Looking forward to it. Thanks so much for having me.
As always, it is our pleasure. That's Mitch Tischler, everybody, with us here on The Hoffman Show. When we get back, the news of the day is that Jamin Davis has been released. Well, this morning, we didn't know that was going to be the news of the day when we recorded Take Command, yet we talked about a relevant topic anyway, which is how the Commanders have kind of zigged in a year that a lot of teams are zagging. And zagging is playing bad, bad football thanks to decisions made in the draft that has left their roster completely depleted. How has there been so much just horrendously bad football? And how have the Commanders avoided falling into that trap with the moves that Adam Peters has made in year one? A really fascinating, wide-ranging football-y conversation between me and Logan that we will let you hear next on the Team 980. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. There's only one Odyssey app, Anthony. There's not three Odyssey apps. Just one.
Yep.
The one and only. I don't know what's wrong with me. Here's the deal. There's a lot of bad football being played in the NFL. I'm talking a lot. And obviously the Commanders have absolutely put a whooping on the Carolina Panthers, who are real bad. The Cleveland Browns, who are real bad. There's some other teams, Tennessee, Vegas, New England, who are just atrociously bad football teams. Why? That's an actual interesting question as we discuss the NFL and try to, through a Commander's lens, make sense of these absolute butt whoopings. Like, okay, what do you want to do? Win 70-0? That'd be cool, but that's not reasonable. It still is NFL football. But why is it happening? What do we make of it? And how have the Commanders, by the way, avoided the same pitfalls that many of these really terrible, bad football teams have? That was a discussion we brought to Take Command this morning at the end of our show. The first 30 minutes was a film breakdown, which, of course, you can check out wherever you get your podcast. Just search Take Command, full episode also at the Team 980 on YouTube. But I think that question becomes even more interesting now that the Commanders have cut yet another former first-round pick in Jamin Davis this afternoon. So without further ado, the conversation that Logan and I had about bad ball and the good ball being played in D.C. Wrapping up the show today with the discussion of something that we have left behind mostly on this podcast, bad football. But it keeps chasing the Washington Commanders. Luckily, it's not infecting the Commanders anymore. But man, there is some bad football being played around the NFL right now. In fact, you could put a number on it and say, Logan, it's historically bad. The folks who do DVOA, they've got kind of a threshold of just horrendous football at 30%. If you're 30% worse than the league average, play in, play out, offensively, defensively, special teams combined, they've never had five teams through 7 weeks at minus 30%. They got five this year. Carolina, Cleveland, New England, Miami, Las Vegas, Tennessee, Jacksonville, and New York are really struggling as well. Like, there's a lot of bad football being played. And you have teams like the Commanders who are absolutely taking advantage of it, as they should, bamboozling these bad teams. But when we take it out of the statistical realm and put it in the actual on-field discussion, Logan, like, what to you stands out is the bad football, and is it worse than you remember seeing in the league as a product as a whole?
Yeah, I think, I don't know if it's worse. Because you know, you're so focused on your own thing, like when you're playing, I think the thing that jumps out to me is, I think quarterback play in general is not as good. I think when, you know, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Drew Brees, Phillip Rivers, Ben Roethlisberger, when all those guys retire, you're going to get worse quarterback play across the board. And I think you see that kind of throughout the NFL. And I think everyone's like, oh, defenses are striking back. I think offenses have just regressed because the talent at the number one, the most important position in the NFL is not what it's been. And we're kind of waiting for the next influx of guys to kind of build, you know, like Trevor Lawrence obviously plays in Jacksonville, and he was supposed to be the second coming, but has not quite reached that, you know, of those guys we just mentioned, where you're talking about him in the same vein as Andrew Luck, for example.
Right.
So I think that to me is like the number one driver. I think defenses are getting a little bit smarter. I think this, another thing that I think is maybe kind of overlooked, is there's been this huge push from an analytics standpoint to stop running the football. So you've got all these roster constructions that are built to just throw the football, and defenses are like, cool, we're just going to play coverage all the time. And it's made it really hard for young quarterbacks specifically to be successful. And I think when you look at the LA Chargers, for example, where Harbaugh's like, we're going to go back, we're going to play 80s football, we're going to run the ball, we're going to possess the ball, we're going to win in a last second exchange because we're an understaffed roster, you see the advantages of kind of playing that smash mouth style in today's NFL, because it deleverages the quarterback, it shortens the game, it limits the number of possessions your defense is on the field. So I think it's kind of a combination of things. Like, the league was kind of evolving and projecting to this quarterback centric model, and then all of a sudden their quarterbacks are all gone and you're having to repopulate those things, right? And so I don't think the league has adjusted quite yet to the lack of quarterback talent, if that makes sense.
For sure. So there's two things off that I think are really interesting. One, you look at the five teams that are below that 30% threshold: Carolina, Cleveland, New England, Miami, Vegas. And those are all teams, especially the worst two, Carolina and Cleveland, are the worst two offenders of this in the league, of investing, putting all their eggs in one quarterback basket, and then that quarterback fails. When I'm not necessarily saying that it's on the quarterback, especially in Bryce Young's case, like, he was drafted 1-1 overall into one of the worst situations we can ever remember in the NFL. Watson's a different story. But in Cleveland, they trade for Watson coming off the ACL. Obviously, we have no idea what's going on with any of the legal stuff. And he comes in and he's awful. But they not only gave him that much guaranteed salary and kill their salary cap, but they give up a bunch of draft picks as well. And so they're counting on him to elevate what is going to be, by nature, because of what was spent on him monetarily and draft pick wise, a depleted roster.
He's instead one of the worst quarterbacks we've seen, and now you have an unmitigated disaster situation for them offensively. And the same token, they kind of did the same thing to Bryce Young. They gave up a ton of talent. They gave up DJ Moore and multiple picks for the right to draft Bryce Young. And he comes in and he's a rookie. He can't elevate anything because he's a rookie.
I just have to look this up just for fun. This is a crazy thing. Like, so to get Bryce Young, the Bears had to give the 9th overall pick, which ended up being their starting right tackle, Darnell Wright, the 61st overall pick, which is a starting cornerback, Tyreek Stevenson. They had to give up a first-round pick the following year, which is Caleb Williams, and they had to give up a second-round pick in 2025 and their best receiver, DJ Moore. Like, think about that. That's five. That's four starting players, five starting players if you count the traded player, five starting good players for them for one player, and it just shows you, I think. Like, we've talked about this ad nauseum, and we talked about this in the context of the Commanders quite a bit, is the environment and the ecosystem is so important. So if you're like, everyone's like, oh, we got to trade, get these people in here. It doesn't always, you got to trust the process. Trust the process when it comes to team building. And the tried and true model is building through the draft. So when you're just hemorrhaging draft picks for this one person, it very rarely works out. And I think you brought up a great point. Carolina and Cleveland, both really good examples of like, when that guy's not elevating your team, you're going to be in a bad spot.
Yeah, and that's why Jaden is so valuable here, is because they acquired him naturally. Like, they did not have to give up anything to take the quarterback at 2 overall, and then they got it right. And it shows when that guy can elevate the roster, like, oh my God, even if your roster's not where you want it to be, you can be really good. And I think that kind of gets to, like, New England obviously is in a mega rebuild because, you know, it's funny. I heard Belichick making fun of the Giants the other day, and I'm like, look, you're the greatest coach of all time. You have 8 rings. Who am I to say anything? But, like, dude went a decade without a rookie draft pick getting to a second contract. Like, that's why New England's in a talent deficit. Miami, obviously, was a little bit different situation. They're built in a very, very, very specific way to which Tua is a perfect fit. Tua goes down. Nobody else can run their offense. And all of a sudden, they stink. And then Vegas is just, I don't know what they're doing. They're an absolute nightmare.
Well, it's a quarterback situation there, too. You know, like, they just didn't have a long-term. Like, I think it's good. They're all good in it. They're all good examples in different ways of not having a contingency at the quarterback spot. Like, if you're going to build an offense like that, like, I love Mike McDaniels. I love their offensive coordinator. I love how they've built that team. But if you're going to mortgage on a specific quarterback style of play, you need to make sure your backup is similar, right? It's the same thing that they did with Lamar Jackson in Baltimore for a long time with, like, the Huntleys and all these different kind of mobile scrambling type guys, the Josh Johnsons of the world. Robert Griffin was there for a little bit. When he goes down, you can still run your offense. And I think Cliff, you know, we just talked about Marcus and what he did in Carolina. Having a type at quarterback and just being able to be like, okay, we can kind of still exist in the same ecosystem we want is extremely important. So it's not only the starter, it's your contingency if something happens to that guy. And like, Miami's a perfect example of that. Las Vegas, I think they were hoping to be elevated by a receiver talent, but the offensive line wasn't there. New England is an unmitigated disaster. You mentioned some of the talent deficiencies and how that started 10 years ago, you know, in terms of them building this roster out. And so they all have their own issue. And those are really maybe extreme examples, like the New England's, the Vegas's, New England and Vegas specifically, because the talent on the roster is so limited. But the quarterback is also part of that equation for sure.
For sure. And those two now in first year new GMs, so they can hopefully rebuild. And in New England's case, it looks like they got their draft pick probably right as well. If Drake can continue to develop, he's actually given them a little bit of life, albeit in 2 losses in these 2 games. And clearly there's a long way to go for him with some of the picks he's thrown. But I think the other part of it that's really interesting on the quarterback front is, and I'm stealing this point from Robert Mays, our friend over at The Athletic, and something he said on their show. Because of the way the contracts work now, especially post like 2011, I think is when the rookie scale came in.
Right.
It is so much more valuable to have a rookie quarterback that the 28-year-old veteran doesn't really exist anymore at the quarterback position, where it used to be like, hey, can we go find a cheap veteran? Because if we take a guy 7th overall, that's the 3rd best quarterback in a draft, we're going to have to pay him stupid money. Now we take that 7th guy, and like, if he doesn't work, we'll take another one next year. Like, we've seen some teams do that. We saw Arizona when Cliff was there, like Josh Rosen, they take it 11th and it's not really working. They have the first pick the next year. It's like, we'll take Kyler. And so I think that the evidence point for that, of like how that can be really valuable, if guys that actually have experience, have been through some stuff and survived, is Geno Smith, Sam Darnold now with Minnesota, Baker Mayfield in Tampa. Like, those are good quarterbacks who were very high draft picks in Darnold and Baker's case, and needed some time in the league and needed to get to different situations. Like, Darnold going to the Jets was a nightmare. Baker, you know, the up and downs of the Cleveland Browns, like, get him out of there and get him in a more stable situation, and you know, have him run through the Sean McVay car wash along the way. And all of a sudden, like, he's a pretty freaking good quarterback. He's not going to be a top 10 guy, but he's going to be between 10 and 15. And so the value of that 28-year-old, let's call it, veteran, who's seen some stuff, been through some things, has a working knowledge of the league, that is competent as a professional, like, that's not a route a lot of teams go. And like, Vegas is, I think, a good example of that, where it's like, they probably could have gotten someone like that, and their best swing at that was Gardner Minshew.
Right.
And instead, you see what happens when you don't have either the young guy that you're developing or the competent, you know, mid-level guy in the league that can actually operate an offense consistently week in, week out.
Yeah, I think that's 100% right. And so, again, like to that point, like, offenses are struggling just generally this year, but look at the kind of the youth movement across the NFL. And I think that's exactly the reason why we're getting that, right, is all these young quarterbacks are more financially viable. And I think another great example to that, add to that list, is like the Joe Flaccos of the world. Like, look at the Indianapolis Colts offense. Like, I think Anthony Richardson is tremendously talented. I really want him to kind of figure out in a Josh Allen type of way, because he has the physical skill set in the same way that Josh Allen does. But the offense is better with Joe Flacco. It's more efficient with Joe Flacco. And it's not because Joe Flacco is a more physically gifted player. It's because he's got more experience. It's the same thing with the Bakers and the Genos. Like, they've been around long enough. They've learned the position enough. And I think that's something people forget, like, fans forget, is that it takes a long time to get comfortable with a certain level of NFL efficiency. And I think that's one of the reasons why Jaden Daniel is so incredibly unique and special, because it seems like he's just every week is just figuring it out at a rate that is kind of unprecedented, in a way that kind of CJ Stroud did last year. And I hate making that comparison because it puts a lot of pressure on Jaden. But that's unique. That's like the unicorn, right? Think about, you know, Josh Allen, how bad the Bills offense was before he like figured it out in year three or four. I forget exactly when that was. But it takes time. And so the NFL offense is going to be less efficient as the quarterback position stays young. And you just gave a good reason as to why that's going to be that way for a long time. And I do think teams maybe should zig a little bit here and say, hey, who is a guy like a Joe Flacco, like a Baker, like a Geno, like a Sam Darnold, that we can kick the tires on and give them an opportunity to play football while we have a young guy on the roster? So I think, I'm trying to think who did this. I think San Francisco was maybe a good example of this, where they drafted two quarterbacks. They had Jimmy Garoppolo at a fairly good number and let those guys kind of come along in the wings for a little bit. I think that's got to be the model, because you're not hurting your offensive efficiency the same way, and you're getting those guys up to speed at what it means to play NFL quarterback. And again, like, right now, we look like we're in the land of milk and honey as the Commanders, because Jaden Daniels seems to have accelerated that process on his own with Cliff's help and obviously Dan's help as well. But I think that's got to be the model moving forward.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting, because then you're like, well, we don't have our guy for the future, and we're going to be too good to be up there in the draft and get him. But it's like, if you can develop a guy while he's learning behind, you know, a really competent guy, like, obviously the best version of that, and this guy was a first round pick, but like Pat Mahomes learning behind Alex Smith had a huge impact on his career.
Jordan Love, great.
Yeah, Jordan Love, Aaron Rodgers before him behind Favre. Like, it is a proven model to an extent. There's no foolproof way to get the right guy at quarterback. But I would also say, Logan, I'd be curious your thoughts on this, especially, is could the same be true or said about other positions? Because the financial incentives are the same at all positions. It's more intensified at quarterback, because if I can pay a quarterback $5 million whenever the top ones are making $60 million, I'm paying 1/12, versus like, you know, hey, Brock Bowers is amazing, but he is not nearly as much of a discount compared to what the top tight ends are making, even if he's better than a lot of those guys. So there is like the financial part of this, but I do think that middle class element, you could look at other areas of the Commanders roster and say, how are they avoiding the bad ball trend? Like, Nick Allegretti may not be the world's greatest left guard. He's a pro. Like, he's a legitimate bona fide pro. Same thing on the other side. Like, Bobby Wagner is not Hall of Fame Bobby Wagner necessarily anymore, but like, that dude knows how to play football and he is helping everyone around him. Luvu's kind of, you know, I think a higher end, upper middle class, if you will, and potentially based off his usage this year could become a star. But like the Commanders have found a bunch of guys who just know how to play, put them on the field together in a well-coached scheme. And like, lo and behold, they're 5-2 because they know how to play good NFL football.
Yeah. I think a great example of that is like offensive line. Everyone always bemoans offensive line talent and offensive line development. And I was kind of like, I don't know how this is going to work out with Brandon Coleman and Cornelius Lucas, but I love the idea of getting him reps in a controlled setting and he's not starting each and every week. And think about how much better he's gotten, Brandon Coleman, over the course of this season without having to put everything on his plate. Like, we're so, to your point, we're so conscientious of the environment that the quarterback's coming into. But I think with offensive linemen, it should be something kind of similar. You know, if you have the opportunity for a guy to develop, like, the worst thing you can do, I think about Andrew Thomas in New York, where you're just like, hey, go figure it out. And it's like, he wasn't ready. And again, 2 years from then, he was ready. Or Colton Miller, the guy from Las Vegas, like, he wasn't ready early in his career, but now he's ready. He's one of the best left tackles in football. Like, what if you could mitigate the ouch of that with a veteran presence? And I think when you look at the New York Jets, it's like another great example. They draft Olufoshana in the first round, but what'd they do? They brought in Morgan Moses and they brought in Tyron Smith. So this player who's a little bit green can get some work in kind of a rotational setting. And I think maybe that's a better way. Again, if we're going to complain about it, oh, offensive line's not developing, what are some different tools we can use? And so I do think that this, again, we're a Commander's show, but I'm being generally honest here. I think that's a good way, what they're doing with Brandon Coleman. Yeah. Be like, hey, let's bring you along in a slow, controlled fashion, and you're going to end up at the end of this year with 700 snaps, which is great, but it's not going to be, you know, 1,500 because you're not going to have to play every single game this season, or I might be off, whatever that is, 350, whatever the snap number is. But I think that's a really good way of looking at it. Even some of the stuff they've done with Mike Sanders still, you know, he's not playing every single snap. I think that's good because you're limiting some of their exposure. So, again, I'm not sure if they did that intentionally, but it's a interesting model that I would be curious to see if other teams apply to other positions, to your point.
I think especially if Washington continues to be successful and these guys come out at killing it, everyone's always trying to figure out what other teams are doing. And it's like, this seems smart. And I would be almost stunned. Actually, I would be stunned if it wasn't intentional, because everything that Adam Peters does is very, very intentional. And he's the one who sets up the program, if you will. And, you know, Quinn was obviously on board with it, if not agree with it, and would have brought the same idea somewhere else. So like, I imagine like when those two met for the first time and there's all these different names from Ben Johnson, Raheem Morris, to all the other candidates that we were talking about, and they sat down and they did that first interview, and all of a sudden there's a couple stories that pop that like Adam Peters and Dan Quinn really hit it off, and Quinn should be seen as one of the favorites, if not the favorite, coming out of the first round interviews. I wonder if that's one of the things they talked about in terms of like how they really want to build this thing from the ground up. Mm-hmm. And I think that other teams would be smart to emulate it, and you have to find the ways within your, what you want to be as a football team, within your salary cap structure, with all of that, with the picks that you have, because it's a lot easier to do, by the way, in one of the best quarterback classes that we've seen in a long time. We have the second overall pick. And by the way, the guy who's going to go second is an exact perfect to a T fit for what you want to do and who you want to be from a character standpoint. That certainly helps you. I don't want to say skip steps, but graduate a few steps quickly. Yeah. But there's other teams that definitely are going to be taking pieces of this.
And sure, and even with the Cornelius Lucas thing and the Brandon Coleman thing, you need a Cornelius Lucas, and those guys just aren't floating around everywhere, right? Like there are challenges to this, you know, that they've done a good job with talent evaluation, but finding those pieces is super important. And, you know, we're kind of digressing, but like the Commanders have just done this process over this last 2 years really well, and I think, you know, one of the things that I'm excited for is that they seem, again, to have this long-term vision, which some of these other teams we just talked about don't necessarily have.
Yeah, what's the
have.
Vision in Las Vegas?
Yeah, like, seriously, vision in Vegas, vision in Carolina right now, like what are they doing? Cleveland, same thing. Like, they started Dorian Thompson-Robinson in the game. Like, as opposed to...
Jameis was the third stringer.
Like, just is that you want him to be your starter moving forward?
Yeah, I wonder if that's what's going to happen this week. Like, is Jameis starting this week, or is DTR starting this week? I don't know, but DTR was the backup. So we'll find out. Yeah. Carolina, I think maybe a little bit more this year than certainly last year. They were like, oh, let's invest in the offensive line. Like, Dan Morgan seems to have a little bit more of a clue than whatever.
I'm not saying they have no clue, but
yeah, but also like I feel bad for Scott Fitterer and some of the other people that were brought in there, because I think the owner's driving that ship, and we know that that's a bad situation. So you have to have a vision. You have to be able to go execute it. And like guys like Zach Ertz become really important, like to kind of, you know, a safety bridge, if you will, a life raft. Hey, by the way, we're going to make sure that you don't fail because we're going to give you a veteran tight end. And by the way, that veteran tight end is probably also developing Ben Sinnott every day to be your tight end of the future. And next thing you know, Jaden and Sinnott are, I don't want to say Mahomes and Kelsey, but like they're going to grow up together with the Commanders. And that's a great thing.
Yeah, what did we just talk about with Carolina? Like, they're starting three rookie players, tight end, two receivers. They're starting three rookie offensive players, and the offense looks like that.
Yeah.
It doesn't have
to
level.
To their credit, Adam Thielen was brought back, yes, and he got hurt. And that offense was better when Adam Thielen was in it. There wasn't a very long stretch that Dalton was playing and Thielen was playing, but when it was, like, they were a significantly better offense.
Right, but we talk about mitigating and managing risk. Like, we could have been like, hey, we're going to draft a tight end in the draft. It's going to be awesome. You know, like, and he's going to develop with Jaden Daniels, but why? If we can manage some of that risk with a guy like Zach, who's a very productive player in the twilight of his career, no doubt. But like, I watch Zach on the weekends, and I'm like, man, he still's got that dark art of running routes. He understands how to create separation. He's the quarterback security blanket. And like you said, Ben Sinnott's going to learn from him, right? And it helps Jaden Daniels' development, because you get a player who's NFL ready, having Terry in there, bringing in Austin Eckler from a pass protection standpoint. All those decisions, like, were just the right ones. And trusting the evaluation and trusting those guys could still do it is also a big part of that, because how many times have we seen teams bring in guys who were a big name but couldn't get it done? So
right.
I just think the whole thing, the whole model of kind of softening the landing, and it does seem very intentional for all of the rookies, was very cool. So,
for sure. And by the way, offensive DVOA, the third best offense in the league right now, to bring things full circle, your Washington Commanders behind Baltimore and Buffalo. So it is working to a T.
So, yeah, there's some really, really good teams and some really, really bad teams, which also leads quite nicely into our next conversation, because on a Tuesday, it is time to rank every single team in our NFL tiers. We'll do our tier rankings. Where do the Commanders fall next on the Hoffman Show?